This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert.
The Obama administration faces a wide variety of foreign policy challenges around the globe. Just today in the news, a ceasefire in Gaza collapsed after a few hours. Fighting continues in Ukraine despite a limited ceasefire. And a count of casualties finds over 1,700 people died in fighting in Iraq last month.
And into that mix, the transition of power in Afghanistan, Central American turmoil sending youth to the American border, and tension between China and its neighbors.
So is the Obama administration overwhelmed by these foreign policy problems? Joe Greco joins us now to sort out that question. He's a professor of political science at Duke University, specializing in foreign policy and international relations. Joe, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you, Rob. It's good to be with you.
So does this convergence of foreign policy problems, do things like this have the potential to overwhelm a president and the administration?
Well, I can understand why we would be concerned about that. It certainly feels very overwhelming for those of us who try to keep up a little bit with the news. I think there would be telltale signs of a foreign policy team that is overwhelmed. For example, overreaction, inability to coordinate with allies. Personally, I don't see that occurring. I think we're actually beginning to see, for example, in the case of Ukraine, a pretty solid coordination by the United States together with its key European allies, especially Germany, in the imposition of a wider and stronger range of sanctions. That, to me, is a sign of coordination, of good diplomacy, of taking a stand in a way that is reasonable. So some of those something that would say, for example, the United States, on the contrary, were to take a unilateral action, losing support from its European allies, that would suggest dysfunctionality. So I don't think I'm seeing that at present. There are certainly lots of crises.
That leads me to a counter hypothesis I wanted to run past you. Are presidential administrations always dealing with lots of problems like this, but they're only in the public eye now because they're, you know, these conflicts are dramatic enough to get our attention from in the media?
That's an interesting point. It's amazingly hard to be a U.S. president, I would think.
True.
If we were to go back, for example, to the 1980s, we would think of lots and lots of crises occurring simultaneously. Bill Clinton was facing serious problems in East Asia with the Chinese threats against Taiwan at the same time that there was a ongoing civil war in the Balkans. So I think we are seeing a pretty high density. And I'll leave it to my quantitative friends to perhaps try to do a measurement of whether we're in an especially challenging time. It feels like it is, but I think you're right. Presidents have a hard road when it comes to foreign policy. If we think back to wartime presidents, for example, like Roosevelt during World War II, this would not be as difficult a period.
Now, there have been accusations, including Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson talking on this show, that the Obama administration is partly responsible for some of these problems anyway, the attitude being that they could have been trying to, right now they're putting out fires as they happen when they could have been proactive and tried to work to prevent some of these problems in the first place. Is that, and we'll get into some more specifics on the issues in a bit, but is that a fair accusation?
It is a fair hypothesis to entertain, but when we do that sort of assessment, the question is, will be in connection to these particular cases, say, for example, Ukraine, or let's say, for example, Chinese pressures against Japan in the East China Sea, or pressures against the Philippines in the South China Sea. What exactly is a strong response? Is it military force? We should be very cautious. My own sense would be about unilateral use of force. We don't want to commit suicide for fear of death.
Hmm. And as far as prioritizing, how does a president decide where to bring the star power out in a way and send the Secretary of State to the region as John Kerry is trying to negotiate the Gaza settlement? How do you pick this is the one we really have to focus the big names on?
I'm sometimes perplexed by this administration's decisions on that score. For example, my own feeling is that if I were to be concerned about a serious war or military conflict involving the United States, I would have thought more attention would be paid to the shoring up and assurance of our Asian allies, in particular Japan, in connection to China, and also making it quite clear to the Chinese that some of their actions are over the line, so to speak. I suspect in the real world of U.S. foreign policy, there are media concerns to which presidents have to respond. The terrible loss of life on both sides in the Gaza war is something that's going to demand attention. But sometimes I wonder if some of the more serious, for the U.S. national interest viewpoint, some of these other issues then get squeezed out, at least temporarily. So that would be my sense about that.
And all these problems, how do we sort out whether this is an American problem threatening American interests versus something maybe we should stand back on, not take a leadership role? Or are we always obliged to try to take a leadership role when there's a conflict around the world?
Well, that latter line of logic would lead to overextension and eventually the United States being able to defend what are really critical interests. And I guess for my part, I would begin with allies. Which allies are having serious challenges? For example, Japan in East Asia or Israel today in the Middle East. Those are, of course, we have very important requirement at this time to reassure Poland and our Baltic allies in NATO that a stand will be taken if needed against Russian probing. So I personally would start with something like that. I of course recognize that as some useful newspaper commentary pointed out, ISIS and its control over territorial parts of Syria and Iraq could produce a new Afghanistan in terms of a haven for terrorists, al-Qaeda-affiliated terrorists, who ultimately might try to strike the United States. That is something that requires attention. But I don't know if it requires immediate use of military force.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's start taking some of these issues in turn and start with ISIS. You say that situation in Iraq and in Syria is not something that military force might be the first answer to. What kind of things can the United States do short of that to try to address the problem?
Yes, I think the two things come to my mind immediately. Number one, diplomacy to try to bring about reconciliation between former Ba'athist party elements among the Sunni population on the one hand and the Shiite-led or dominated government of Prime Minister Malachi on the other. ISIS now enjoys support from many Sunnis, including former Ba'athist military officers, because they fear Malachi more than they fear ISIS. Without that support, I think ISIS wouldn't last very long in Iraq. So therefore, diplomacy to bring about, to split away the Sunni former Ba'athist elements away from ISIS should be a top priority.
And briefly, foreign policy problems bleeding over into each other. We're negotiating with Iran on nuclear talks. Those have been postponed for a while trying to get Iran's help on dealing with what's going on in Iraq.
The United States and Iraq share a common interest in the prevention of ISIS from taking control over a large portion of Iraq. Whether there's actual grounds for communications or sharing of information, that may be possible. But there is a common interest. I don't think, well, and on the other hand, There's also serious conflicts of interest between the United States and several of its allies and Iran regarding its nuclear program. That's going to be probably a constraint on dealing with ISIS.
Foreign policy expert Joe Greco is with us, helping answer the question: with so many foreign policy problems around the world, Gaza and Ukraine, Iraq and Central America, where should the priority be, and is the Obama White House overwhelmed? I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue our conversation with foreign policy expert Joe Greco at Duke University, looking at the long list of problems facing the Obama foreign policy team.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Crises ranging from Ukraine to Gaza, Central America to Iraq. Where should the Obama administration put its priorities? Where should we back off? Maybe it's not our problem. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email talk@wpr.org. We'll go to Nicholas on the line in Madison now. Nicholas, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you think?
Personally, I think the more that we're involved in the Middle East, the worse it gets. I feel like they feel that we're trying to police them and kind of push our beliefs onto them. So I kind of think if we just backed off on them, they wouldn't be so hostile towards us.
Nicholas, thanks for the call. Joe Greco, do you think there's anything to that, to back off and not be so directly engaged in turmoil there in the Middle East?
Well, the United States has been deeply enmeshed in Middle Eastern politics since the 1940s, and it is one of the most complex places on Earth and one of the most difficult places for U.S. foreign policy. I think I share the sense of Nicholas that, and I wouldn't refer to it as backing off or backing away, the United States has an important alliance, congressionally authorized alliance. It's not a formal treaty alliance, but it's a congressionally legal-based alliance with Israel. We also have important ties with Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Turkey. Those relationships are going to stay important. I do think that when I hear some arguments in favor, for example, of more active military support of so-called moderate elements in this Syrian civil war, that's where I begin to have the kind of instincts and inclinations expressed by Nicholas that this could be a step in a wrong direction. So I think nuanced engagement, nuanced and intelligent engagement, which sometimes means we stay out of military conflicts, for example, the civil war in Syria.
It seems like each administration for a number of years now has tried to go in and get a lasting settlement between Israel and the Palestinians. It's the Gordian knot for presidents. Is there any hope that this administration or the next one can actually do that? Do we have that much influence?
Well, that's one of the most tightly drawn Gordian knots, isn't it? Mm. There has been progress. Let's remember, there is a peace treaty between Israel and Egypt. There is a peace treaty between Israel and Jordan. There has been a proposal by Saudi Arabia some years ago that would envision a settlement and acceptance of Israel as part of the region. Tremendous change in terms of Saudi Arabia's position. So there has been some progress. However, right now it's pretty clear that due to internal domestic politics in Israel, Israel isn't able to move forward on a two-state solution. It doesn't trust that it can have a secure future with a weak Palestinian Authority and a hostile Hamas. And I don't know how much the United States can change that calculation for the foreseeable future.
Well, I want to move a ways from there now to an issue that you've mentioned briefly a couple times, one that you're worried is being obscured, overlooked in the midst of all these headlines from everywhere else, conflicts between China and various other neighbors in the China Sea area. That's not something we've been reading a lot about. Can you spell out the basics?
It doesn't get it sometimes hits the front page of the major newspapers, but it's quite rare. China basically claims a great deal of the sea space between itself and its neighbors, extending deep into the South China Sea as well as the East China Sea. There may be the reasons for this might be have to do with possible natural gas and oil resources under the seabed. The problem is that these claims interfere with or contradict the division of the sea space that is envisioned under the 1982 Law of the Seas Agreement. And the Chinese oftentimes do things to, for example, they've just moved a large oil exploration rig into what under any reasonable interpretation is Vietnamese territorial waters. They have created outposts in what, under international legal standards, is pretty clearly Philippine controlled sea space in the South China Sea. There was an incident just last year involving a Chinese naval vessel that cut across the path of a U.S. vessel, reminiscent of some of the near-miss kind of incidents at sea problem that occurred during the height of the Cold War with the Soviet Union. So this is an issue, I think, that if I do think there could be an event that would actually involve significant U.S. use of force or the question of the United States use of force, it would be in connection to some of these very close allies of the United States. I'm referring to Japan and the Philippines, not Vietnam.
Well, use of force between the United States and China sounds very, very dangerous. What kind of things would you like to see in U.S. foreign policy to head that off?
Well, I think the strongest thing that can be done is to reassure, is to take actions that persuade the Chinese leadership under President Xi that, in fact, the United States does recognize that and would defend Japan were China to take some of the action, for example, to try to occupy islands that are now in which it believes it's in dispute, which are in dispute, but which are under the administrative authority of Japan out there in the East China Sea. So that, I think, is a high priority action. This includes bilateral work with Japan, also perhaps trying to smooth relations, which have been continue to be rocky between Japan and South Korea. There's also an important role to be played by Australia, which I think is interested in working more closely with the United States. There's also another side to the coin. We don't want to be drawn into a conflict between China and Vietnam, and I fear sometimes that Vietnam has a history of tremendous belligerence and willingness to take risks and would like to draw us into a conflict with China. So both reassurance on the one hand, but also limiting our liability on the other.
Just briefly before we're done, with all these other issues we're talking about, do you think the U.S., the administration, has its eye on the ball on this China issue and is dealing with that along with these other problems?
I think it's doing a reasonably good job. I worry that the Chinese leadership are watching the other areas very closely, and the more they try to draw inferences that might suggest adventurism, the more effort and more explicit the effort, without starting a conflict, but the more reassurance efforts need to be taken, both in connection to Japan, but I'd also accent I think more reassurance efforts have to be made. Keep an eye on September, the NATO summit. The United States needs to work hard with its allies to reassure Poland and the Baltic countries and send a strong signal to President Putin that Article 5 does apply to those countries.
Joe, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure, both you. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Veronica.
That's Joe Greco. He's professor of political science at Duke University.